Hebrews 10, 23 through 26. Let us hold fast the confessions of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. And let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works, not neglecting to meet together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. First, I'd like to thank everybody here for their support, whether it was financial or if it was with prayer. What you're about to see is some of the stuff that we actually did, but it's more than that. It's to show you guys as well that you have the opportunity to be missionaries, whether it's abroad or if it's here at home. So at this time, if we could do the video. Thank you.
Day one in Guatemala is going great. We all made it here safely, and we learned a whole bunch of new stuff today. I was on the healthcare site. I learned how to take people's blood pressures and how to check their height and weight and temperature. I am new to this, so I kept messing up and kept saying, lo siento, which means I'm sorry. And the people were just so kind and compassionate towards me, even though I messed up on them like 100 times. I learned all about how to build relationships with these people, and they're so open to us, even though we're different, but we're all connected through Jesus, and that's what really matters. Thank you for the prayers. They are greatly appreciated. We're doing great, and everyone's having a fun time. So, adios.
From Guatemala, day dos, day dos. Today we went to a community right outside of Magdalena where we're staying, and we went to this woman's home named Lydia, and I'm part of the AT team, the appropriate technology. And what we've been doing is we're either building stoves or repairing people's stoves that keep smoke out of their house and keeps them healthy. And they're like 60% more efficient, like it burns less wood. Today we went to a lady's home named Lydia, and her livelihood is based off of her two stoves cooking tamales and chile rellenos. And so she has two stoves, and one was broken, so we came in and we fixed it, but she makes about 150 of whatever food she's cooking that day. It always is different, but it's generally going to be tamales. And she will, once she makes about 150 of them, she takes them up to the schools, and she like will sell them to like parents coming by. And she sells all of them. She sells all 150 every day, she says. We fixed her stove. We put in new pieces that it needed. It felt really good to be able to help her out, and because those two stoves are what's almost probably what's most important to her, is because that's her way of income to live. And so that was a really good feeling to have.
So day one in Guatemala, we went to the community center and we played games called the Olympic Games. We went to a school and the kids seemed pretty overjoyed that we were there. And then we went to a soccer field. I gave a kid a baseball and he seemed so excited. And opened the baseball up and started throwing it around. Then the next day, we kind of went to every school in the area. On day four, I got to share my testimony, and it was really good. I got to share a few things about me. I was talking about how I played sports, and I try to use God when I play sports, and it was really good.
El Gorion, Guatemala is a small community located down a dirt footpath about a mile from our host town. El Gorion was founded in 1999 when displaced people from Hurricane Mitch settled here. There is no running water or sanitation, and many homes have dirt floors. Homes have no addresses or mail as we know it. Most kids drop out of school after sixth grade. In addition to the challenges associated with poverty, the community struggles with alcohol abuse, domestic violence, infidelity, and loneliness. This village impacted me the most. Our tutoring team went on home visits in the mornings to listen and encourage and pray with the mothers of the children in the tutoring program. My most humbling experience was visiting a woman who became a mother at the age of 12. Now, as a 19-year-old single mom with another baby, her 7-year-old daughter is struggling with school and being teased by her peers. As I sat in her home on a dirty bed with no mattress, Raquel, our site leader, and the mother spoke softly in Spanish about her needs and prayer requests. Raquel asked me if I would open in prayer. I thanked God for this mother and the opportunity to visit her, and thanked God that she knew him and was seeking him with her heart. Raquel, our site leader, translated into Spanish and finished the prayer. The other home visits went similar, and I was overwhelmed with emotion. The joy and gratitude of people with so little confused me. Didn't they understand how little they had? Or didn't I understand how little I need? God became bigger to me that morning. He went from being American to being multicultural and multilingual. His volcano creations soared in the sky, the backyard view to the tin houses. His flowers decorated the streets of the impoverished town. His creation cannot be denied, even in desperate places. So now my challenge to myself is how I will change in my prayer time, in my giving, and in helping others that are in need. So thank you, CCPL, for your prayers and your support. This opportunity has touched my life deeply. Thank you.
Hi there. My name is PJ, and this is my daughter, Cammie. We were privileged enough to be on the team that went to Guatemala also. Like everybody else, first and foremost, thank you guys so much for your support, prayers, and financial and emotional. It meant a ton to us. I was with Riley and Joe and Jake. Brian, on the applied technology team. Funny story was we got to the airport, got picked up by the Students International guy, and we had about an hour drive up to Magdalena. And I bent his ear the entire way about every question I could think of. And I'm one of those guys that watches all those, you know, what could happen outside the country things. So I think everybody out there is going to try to kill me. So I'm asking, what do I have to worry about? What's the safe? He said, you don't have to worry about anything. He said, this is just as safe as home. He said, just relax, you know. So I asked him all these questions. They drop us off at what they call Central Park. They assign us to our host family and say, there you go. So Cammie and I, dragging our luggage down this cobblestone road, get to this house. I speak, my phrase for the week was un poco español, or my español es muy mal. Got that down really well because I used it a lot. The lo siento that Emily used earlier, I still can't do it. It took me till Friday till I almost got it. It was something about cilantro at one point. So our host family lady is walking us around, and of course Cammie speaks decent Spanish, so she was translating as much as she could. But it was all a bunch of grunts and this, and this is how you wash your hands, and we're like, okay, you know. I sat on the bed that night, and I looked at myself, and I looked at Cammie, and I said, now I think of all the questions I should have asked Noah on the way up here. Because it wasn't about my safety, it was about how do I function in a place I can't speak the language. like I said, I was on the applied technology team, so I knew I was going to be doing a lot of physical. Physical's not a big deal to me. I could work till I drop. It's not a big deal. But I sat there at that moment, not feeling like I shouldn't be there, but how can I do anything to make this relevant? You know, how can I reach people? I mean, they could get somebody down the street and hire them to work and build something or put a stove in somewhere. I learned throughout the week that it was less about what I could do and what God could do through me. I had an occasion where they were putting in stove in a little brick building, and it was so smoky that our team couldn't go all in there at the same time. So we were rotating in two at a time. The whole time the lady's in there cooking herself and just breathing the smoke. Well, I sat outside and started talking with the little girl that you saw in the video, and she had a little sister who was even cuter than her. And it was one of those, when we left, I told my site leader, I said, I feel bad, everybody's gonna think I'm not doing any work. He said, well, what was more rewarding? Spending that time talking to that little girl or building a stove? I said, well, it was talking to the little girl. He said, well, then that's what you needed to do. So it was one of those illustrations throughout the week that I realized it wasn't about the physical part. It was about being present and listening and letting God work through me. One last little story. We had at the end of the week, a lady that we had put a stove in, not us, but our group earlier, another team, had put a stove in her house. And it was down in, what's that place called? El Gorion, where they have nothing. She invited us, our team, for lunch, which was like the third lunch we had that day. But it was really nice, their hospitality. But we sat in her little shack of a house. It was five people in a little dirt floor with two chickens and several chicks running around on the floor. But the joy she had and the gratitude she had for all that we did for her. And she taught us how to make tortillas, which we were horrible at. But it was just one of those, she opened our home and what little she had, it showed me throughout the week that God can move even if I can't speak the language. I can speak God really well if I just let him. And then Kimmy has a little story too.
Well, I'm too short for the microphone, but I worked at the art site with Ariel and Jake, and I was at the art school a lot, and I know that they talked about how, kids that drop out of school in, sixth grade will come, but it's also, elementary kids and younger children, and there were these two boys who were brothers, and they would come there all the time. They were, constantly there, and one was 7 and the other was 11. And they were amazing at art. And I am horrible at art. At least I think I am. But they were prodigy awesome. But I found out that their dad was an abusive alcoholic and would beat their mom all the time. And I didn't realize that at first. And I was constantly wondering why the boys were painting and crying a lot. And I would ask our site leader, Alvaro, what was going on, and he would explain to me. And he would just pick up, the younger boy and just sit him in his lap and let him cry and keep helping him paint. And would talk to him in Spanish about how God loves him and everything. So you don't typically think that art could be such a big, gateway to talking about Christ or to witnessing to people. But just seeing that was wow, art actually has a much bigger impact than I thought it did. So that's all I got.
And then if we could pray for the sermon coming up. Dear Lord, I just thank you so much for the opportunity for each one of us that got to go on the trip to Guatemala. I thank you so much for your just mercies that when we got sick, we weren't too sick and we got over it quick and you got us back safely. I thank you for Joe, who was willing to go and just lead this gang of misfits through a country we had no idea what we were doing. I just thank you for the site leaders and Students International who we would have been in real trouble if they weren't there. I just pray that the words that Joe says today hit home and help illustrate what great things we can do when we put you first and go out and praise your name. In Jesus' name we pray, amen.
Thanks, PJ. I hope you guys have enjoyed hearing some of the stories. I know it's cool, even for me. You know, there's just so many, there were 14 on our team and so many different stories. And so I haven't necessarily even gotten to hear every single story that people have. So they're going to be out there. Our team's going to be out in the lobby after service and in between services. So if you want to hear more stories, just pull someone aside. They all get those shirts on and talk to them, because just the way God moved, it was really incredible. And today I want to talk about missions. It's neat. We got our team here, and it's great to see. You know, Baker's here, full-time missionaries would be support. And I think missions is a really, really important thing for all of us if we're believers. And so I want to start. We're going to read Romans 10 through 15 today, and that's going to be our main passage. And it says, "For with the heart one believes and is justified, and with the mouth one confesses and is saved. For the scriptures say, everyone who believes in him who will not be put to shame. For there is no distinction between Jew and Greek. For the name of the Lord is the Lord of all lords, bestowing on his riches to all who call on him. For everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. How then will they call on him who they have not believed? And how will they believe in whom they have not never heard? And how are they to hear without someone preaching? And how are they to preach unless they are sent? As it is written, how beautiful are the feet of those who preach the good news." And see, I really think this kind of sums up for us the stages of missions, or the way that missions is supposed to work. Right? You have this good news. You have the gospel. The fact that Jesus Christ died in order to restore us with God. That the relationship that was broken by sin would be restored. Right? That's wonderful, amazing news. It's the most important news that's out there. And all that someone has to do is to accept those statements, to accept that they are sinners separated from God and they need Christ to restore them to him. And then they will be justified, and that separation will no longer exist. But how can anyone possibly ever believe those statements if they've never heard them? Right? If you've never heard the gospel, it's impossible for you to accept it. And how can someone ever hear that gospel if it hasn't been preached to them? And one can't preach unless they are sent in order to do so. And so Paul's not like asking questions here. He's not genuinely, you know, wondering like, how would someone ever hear the gospel if they didn't hear it? That's a tough one. How am I going to answer that question? No, he's asking rhetorical questions because he wants us as believers to understand that we need to go and to be sent and to preach the gospel so that those who have not heard it can hear it. And here's the funny thing, is that Paul doesn't tell us who these people are that are being sent. He doesn't label them. If you look, he just says, and how are they to preach unless they are sent? Right? He doesn't label them pastors or missionaries or full-time ministers, people who are ministry full-time. No, he just says those who are sent. He leaves it wide open. And there's a reason for that. The reason is, there are a few who are called to full-time international missions, but everyone is called to missions. The reality is if you have this good news, if you have what people need to hear, then you have a responsibility to preach it, right? And not everyone is going to go overseas, right? Not everyone is going to leave and say, hey, I'm gonna go to Africa, or I'm gonna go to Guatemala. That's not the call that God has in everyone's life. Right, because if we all left and went to Guatemala, or we all left and went to Africa, there would be no one to reach the people here, right? And I think we've kind of, throughout the recent years of church history, have given people the perception that missions is only overseas, or that missions is only the responsibility of those who do it full time, when nothing could be farther from the truth. You know, Paul starts in it, and again, he really debunks this perception that it's only the full-time people by not labeling them. He says, just those who are sent. And we should all be sent. If we're believers, we're all sent into the world by Christ. Right? That's why we're still here. And then the second perception, right, of missionaries only being people to go to other countries, I think that's debunked in Acts 1:8, where it says, you will receive power when the Holy Spirit comes on you, and you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem, in all of Judah, in Samaria, and to the ends of the earth. When Jesus talks about those who are sent, those are who his witnesses, he starts in Jerusalem, where his disciples lived. And he expands out from there into Judah, Samaria, and the ends of the earth. He's saying, look, it's not just the responsibility of those who leave to be my witnesses, but it's the responsibility of those who are at home as well. And so if missions starts at home, what does missions look like? If it's not just simply going to another country and sharing the gospel and doing things that we understand that full-time missionaries do, what does it look like for us? What does it look like for those who are here? And here's where I think it kind of breaks down. And this is where our perceptions of missions begins to change. Because I think for many of us, we look at missions and we stick missions in the 2 to 5%. Right? And we say that when you go on an international missions trip, that's when you're doing missions. Right? And many of us may have been on an international trip. We just got back from one. Some of you may have done that. Right? But if you're an average person and you're or above average person, you're a really good Christian, you do international missions 2 or 3 weeks a year, 2 to 5% of your time is spent doing international missions. But we think that that's kind of 100% of where the efforts for missions should go. But when in reality, the 85 to 80% where we spend the majority of our time, that's where the majority of each and every one of our effort and missions should go. Because the reality is you're in your community every single day. You're in your home every single day. You're in your neighborhood every single day. You bump into the same people at work every single day. That's your missions field. We get it wrong when we try to take 80 to 85% of our efforts as people who live in America, as average Christians who aren't in full-time ministry, and say 100% of my missions effort is going to be international. No, no, no. It needs to start in our immediate communities, in our grocery stores, in our workplaces, in our neighborhoods, with the people who live just down the street. And also another important aspect is local ministry partnerships, right? A lot of us spend time volunteering, and that's a chunk of that as well. But it needs to be divided in the ways that we spend our time. So since 85% of our time is spent in our immediate communities, 85% of our efforts as missionaries should be spent in our local communities. 10 to 18, with our local ministry partnerships, supporting them, volunteering. And finally, 2 to 5%, like we just did in Guatemala, internationally. Right, my team that we took to Guatemala is going to miss out if they say, Guatemala was my missions work, that was it. I'm back now, I get to relax, I'm no longer a missionary. No, they are missionaries in their communities every single day, as are all of us. See, God's really been teaching me over the course of the summer. And it's funny because when I went to Guatemala, I didn't have the expectation of learning a lot, which just sounds kind of silly. But I've been on 33 short-term missions trips. And so my expectation was, hey, I'm gonna go, this is gonna be an amazing experience, but I'm really there to facilitate for my other team members, to take these guys who have never gotten to do something like this before and watch God grow and work through them. And he was like, no, that's really funny. Actually, you're gonna learn more than you ever have before. And God really taught me that missions happens in the rhythms of normal life. One of the missionaries we were working with while we were down there, his name was Noah. He's in the middle of this picture here. And he really began to teach me this. Because what we did while we were down there is no different than what he would be doing on every single day that he was there. He didn't change his schedule because we arrived. He didn't say, oh, we have some Americans here, so let me, you know, put you in and have you go do this. Or let me make up this job for you to do. No, we did the things that he would have been doing regardless of whether or not we were there. And missions happened in the rhythms of everyday life. You know, you got to hear some stories from PJ and from Riley. Our job was really to go into homes and to build stoves so that the smoke that's created from the fires would leave the building and not stay in and harm the lungs of those who were cooking. And on the surface, that doesn't sound like something that's really that evangelistic. It's gonna reach people. And that was kind of my thought process going in. I was like, all right, God, you're gonna have to really help me to take advantage of the opportunities, the small ones I may have while doing this, to preach the gospel to these people. But the reality was is that in the rhythms of everyday life, installing these stoves, there were so many opportunities. It was constant. Like PJ was saying, was we couldn't ever all be on one stove at a time. And the people were always there, always wanting to talk to us, always wanting to hear from us, wanting to pray with us, wanting to hear the gospel, to learn more about Christ. You know, it's cool. The other guy who's not pictured there, his name was Pedro. He's a bricklayer in Guatemala. That's his job. He's not a missionary. He's someone who's contracted by SI to help lay these stoves, because he's fantastic at it. I mean, we would build a stove in 3 hours that he could do in 15 minutes. I mean, this dude could lay out some bricks really, really quickly. And kind of our joke for the week was that whenever you did anything right, you were Pedroing something, because he just seemed to do everything perfectly and really quick. But so he would come along and he would help us. He was the ones who taught us how to lay bricks, how to build stoves, how to mix concrete. He taught us how to do all those things and even taught us a lot of Spanish. And he was someone who grew up knowing about the Catholic Church, had a fair understanding of Catholicism, but really did not have an intimate relationship with Jesus Christ. He didn't know that you could connect with God on an intimate level, that you could talk to him, that you could have a relationship with him. And so every day, while just doing what he was doing, doing his livelihood, building his stoves, laying his bricks, I got to be there learning from him, talking to him, hearing his story, and then after he shared his story with me, getting to share mine with him and saying, look, this is how God has impacted me. This is why I'm here. This is the relationship I have with God. And it wouldn't have happened if I wasn't doing the things that he does in everyday life along with him. Those opportunities are going to show up in the rhythms of your normal life. And along with that, it's important to take advantage of every single moment. If we're all called to be missionaries at home, if we're all called to live a missional lifestyle, then we need to take advantage of every single moment. Going to the grocery store is no longer just going to the grocery store. Going to the grocery store is an opportunity to see your neighbor and engage in a conversation. It's an opportunity to talk to that clerk that you see every time you go to that grocery store because he's always there when you go. And begin to engage in a deeper relationship, to go beyond, to say, hey, maybe let's come over sometime for dinner. Hospitality in America has really been lost, and I think the church and mission suffers because of the lack of hospitality that we see today. You know, it used to be that you could go over to someone's house without you know, introducing yourself. You could just go over and say, hey, I'm coming over tonight. And you know, mom would always have that cake on the side that was only for company. You know, if she came over, like, don't eat this cake, it's for company, right? And if the doorbell rang, everyone was excited, like, someone's here. But nowadays, you go ring someone's doorbell and everyone's like, hit the floor, someone's here, peek out the window, who is it? We've got to watch out. You know, you always have to call before you go over, right? And I think we need to take advantage of moments to be hospitable to people, to invite people into our lives. And if we do that, we'll begin to understand what it looks like to be missionals in our community. So here's kind of something that missions is not. And I see this a lot, especially with students. Missions is not simply inviting people to church. I think for a long time we've kind of had this mentality that I'll just invite you to church and then Pastor Mike will do the real work. He'll talk to you. He'll convince you that Jesus is the person you need. Or, you know, as students, they'll be, I'll come to Joe, meet him. He'll talk to you about Jesus. And all your responsibility is to invite people to church and allow the pastors to do the work. Well, let me tell you something. As pastors, the staff here, to give you a war analogy, we're the armory, and you guys are the army. You come to us, and we're like, here's a new sword, yours is broken, or here's a helmet, here's what you need. Now you go out and you fight the battle, and we stay home in the armory. And honestly, I get kind of jealous sometimes because I want to be on the front lines. You know, a sports analogy for you is that we're the coaches. We're the people who train you, who get you ready to go play the game, who give you that motivational speech on Sunday. But then Monday comes and the game starts and we're on the sidelines and you're on the field. You guys are the front lines. And so I'm not by any means saying don't invite people to church. Please invite people to church, that's great. But don't use that as an excuse to not intimately disciple people in your communities. Because missions is so much more than just inviting someone to church. Missions is engaging with people and discipling them through the normal rhythms of everyday life. So here's three steps to begin living missionally, to live out this call to preach the gospel to those who have not heard it. Step one is pray for people. We're actually taking our students through this process right now of saying, hey, you guys are missionaries in your schools. You guys are missionaries in your neighborhoods. What does that look like? Step one we gave them was pray. We said, pick one person that you know who needs the good news and pray for them for 7 days, every single day. And then step two was ask them how you can pray for them. It's so simple, but it opens up a door, right? I've been doing ministry, I've been praying for people for a long time, and I've asked a lot of people if I could pray for them. And there are times where people are like, no, not interested at all. Please don't pray for me. And then I go pray for them anyway. But where the response is negative. But 95% of the time, no matter what religious background they have, no matter whether they're atheist or Muslim, no matter where they come from, they'll say, yes, here's how you can pray for me. And that's a small window to jump in to say, hey, I'm praying for you. I'm engaging with you. And then it only goes further from there. Once you're in the door and once you've been able to begin praying for this person and ask them to pray for them and ask how you can pray for them, you begin to understand some of their stories. People's prayer requests reveal a lot about what they're going through. And it gives you opportunity to listen, to hear. You know, a lot of times I think we again view missions as just barging down a door and saying, here's the gospel, eat it all up. And that's important, and we need to be sharing the gospel. But we also need to take opportunities to listen to the hurts and pains of people who are hurting and in pain. Because we have the only thing that can restore them. Christ is the only thing that can fix the realities of life. And a lot of times the reality is that those things may not be resolved in this life, but there's hope in what Christ offers in the next life. So take the opportunity to listen to people and then speak Christ into that. Once you've prayed for them, once you've listened to them, then you have your opportunity to share. And then you're not just sharing this gospel that seems to hit off of what they're going through, but you're sharing a gospel that is specifically targeted to what they are going through. Oh, you're going through a divorce. Let me show you how Christ speaks into that situation. You know, you have an abusive father. Let me tell you about God the Father and what he wants for you, what he hopes for you. And then the gospel is so much more powerful when it's integrated into the lives of people on an intimate basis and in a way that connects with their stories, then that's when it really begins to work. So I really hope that all of us today, that as a result of hearing about this team, that a result of learning about Romans 10, seeing that you need to be sent, that you are sent, that you would go back into your communities, that you would be the players on the field, that you would be the warriors out there fighting the battle, engaging with people in the rhythms of normal life, and saying, here's the gospel, here's what you need. Before we close, I'm going to actually have a couple more of our team come up and share some stories, and I'll give you guys a closing thought. Beth? Andrew?
Hello, everyone. So my time at Guatemala was very humbling to me. I worked on the sports ministry site with my dad and my younger brother. On day one, we went to a city called Santo Tomas. It was right outside the main city that we were at called Magdalena. We went out, handed out invitations to the kids to come out and play sports with us. And so the next day, we went to their park area where it was a concrete slab and a soccer field right next to it. And we gathered the kids around, and I gave them my testimony. I told them who Jesus was and what he's done for all of us, and that he died on the cross and he rose. And then I told him what he's done for me in my life through my injury in sports, and that he's given me a second chance to be able to play for him, and that I pray before and after all of my games. My challenge, what I've learned from that is that we can, from our passions, we can share the gospel, whether it's through sports or where Joe said that it's putting a concrete stove into, and or what's with the arts or just anything that we do, that we can share the gospel. And that's my challenge to all of you, is just use your passions to share the gospel to everyone. So yeah.
First, I'd like to thank everyone for the prayer and financial support for our team. Without you, this wouldn't be possible. So you are part of our team. Looking back on my week in Guatemala, I know that God intended for me to be there, not necessarily to do something for the people in Magdalena, but maybe something big in my heart. Thank you. As long as I have been a nurse, I have desired to be able to use my skills in a missionary setting, whether it be locally or internationally. but I did feel like using my skills internationally, I would be afforded more opportunities than I am here in the United States. I'm not afforded the time to spend with my patients like I'd like to pull out a Bible and read with them, to pray over them, to connect with them in their home and visit them and stay connected and build relationship. I began my first day on the healthcare site with so much excitement to see what God was going to do. But by the end of the day, I was experiencing culture shock, and I was secretly counting the days till we could make it back home. I talked to my team about this in our time together in the evening and prayed to God and talked with him. It was so difficult for me to see how the people of Magdalena and the other villagers lived. I felt sad for them not getting to experience all that we have here in the United States. I didn't know what I was going to do with all of this when I got back home. The financial poverty was overwhelming. I wondered why some of us have more opportunities than others. Was that all there was for them? I spent time talking to God about how I was feeling, and I asked him to teach me something each time I felt sad for the people. I wanted him to show me why I was there and what he had in store for me. The very reason that I felt uncomfortable was what he used to teach me something about myself. God showed me that the people of Magdalena and the surrounding villages had so much that I could learn from. They're friendly, they're warm, they're happy, and they're grateful. They are grateful for what they have, and they are not looking for the next thing that will make them happy. Yes, there may be financial poverty in Magdalena, in the villages, but they are rich in so many things. They are not so distracted as we are in the United States. As the days went on, I found myself wanting to live the simple life, a life fully relying on God and not on the things of this world. I didn't want to return home to the opportunities that I thought that the people of Guatemala were missing out on. Those things now seem trivial and foolish to me. They are just distractions that keep me from what God wants for me. He desires a relationship with us and for us to have relationships with others. And he showed me that by working with the healthcare team. While working with this team, I was able to share my testimony with other mothers in El Tablon. I was able to pray at the bedside of an elderly couple that was ill and provide medical care for sick children. God was so evident in those moments, and I realize that I do have those same opportunities here. I just need to be looking for them. Since our return, I have asked God to help me live more simply, to rely solely on him and to take hold of the opportunities he provides for me to share my faith. My prayer for you is that you find these opportunities too, quiet moments without the world's distractions. Thank you.
So I want to leave you with this. Romans 10:15. How do they preach unless they are sent? As it is written, how beautiful are the feet of those who preach the good news. I've gotten to hear so many stories today, and again, like Andrew and Beth said, it's in those rhythms of normal life. You know, Andrew's life, a lot of it's sports. It's a huge rhythm of his life, and he got to use that rhythm of his life to share the gospel. So as you sent us, I'm sending you. You know, you allowed us to go on this trip and to be missional. And now it's my turn to do the same for you. I say, go. Be missional in the rhythms of your everyday life. Have a great Lord's Day.